or maybe it's not such a good afternoon. Did you write it?
Yes.
I did. Well, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals, and you're our only oral argument this afternoon, so this worked out fine. We were able to handle the ones that were submitted without argument by conferences while we were waiting, so it's fine. We will go forward with it and let you begin. I will ask Megan to call the case.
May it please the court, Ms. Brenda Williams to argue for appellant, Mr. Gregory Ave to argue for appellee.
Okay, Ms. Williams, are you ready?
Yes. May it please the court. The issues before the court, the first issue before the court is whether the trial court erred in granting FHA's second partial motion for summary judgment. And the second issue is whether the trial court erred in granting the directed verdict in the case at the close of trial on the basis the plaintiff's evidence was insufficient as a matter of law. Okay, the first issue deal with is the issue related to the summary judgment. Appellant contends that the exclusive remedy provision is an affirmative defense that must be asserted and proven by the employer. And in this case, FHA must establish applicability of the defense and prove that it was plaintiff's employer. The employee status versus independent contractor status is a fact issue which precludes the granting of the summary judgment in this case. Throughout both the workers' comp case and the trial court, F. Hall contended that it was not Tim Calhoun's employer and that Tim Calhoun was an independent contractor. In fact, Devin Hall presented an affidavit during the workers' comp proceedings stating that F. Hall was not Mr. Calhoun's employer and that he was an independent contractor. And basically, if the defendant was not entitled to summary judgment, if independent contractor status versus employee status is a fact issue that could have been determined or should have been determined by a trier of fact at the time of trial, and that there were clearly material issues of genuine fact that remain for determination. The second issue deals with, well, it's our position that the court is not bound by the workers' comp has different standards, has a lesser standard for who's an employee versus an independent contractor. And, in fact, the contested case hearing officer who heard the case indicated in his opinion that there was quite a bit of conflict in the testimony as to whether Mr. Calhoun was or was not an employee. But for the purposes of workers' comp, he erred on the side of saying that he was an employee. But it's clear that there were the facts of the case would tend to, at best, it falls in a gray area. But it's clear that if you look at the arguments that Mr. Hall was making, that they were paid on a job basis and that they, that the details of their work were left up to them. Based on their argument, it's clear that under Texas law, Mr. Calhoun would have more than likely been considered to be a independent contractor as opposed to an employee. There were no paychecks. There were no hours kept. It was a job-to-job basis. In fact, on the day of the injury, that was the first day that Mr. Calhoun had actually been on that job site to work. So I don't think the court is bound by the determination of the Workers' Comp Commission because their standards are and their rules are more favorable to have someone considered an employee as based upon just a general Texas law and case law as opposed to independent contractor status versus employee status.
Do you have any case law authority for your position that this court's not bound by that previous decision?
Of the administrative agency?
Yes.
Let me see. I think I should have cited something in my brief.
I
Well, I think I was basing that on the fact that the Texas cases hold that the exclusive remedy provision is an affirmative defense that must be asserted and proven by the employer. And that if the employer has to prove the defense as a matter of law, then he has to actually prove that he is the person's employer or that the person is an employee. And it's our contention that they were not able to prove, in fact, that they were the employer. And if it's a defensive, if it's an affirmative defense as a matter of law, then it would be up to them to put forth evidence that, in fact, they were the employer and that he was an employee. And I think this documentation would have to be presented in the trial court. Because that's a threshold issue in this case, the independent status, independent contractor status versus the employer status, employee status. Okay. Okay, the second issue in the case deals with the court's granting the directed verdict in this case at the close of testimony. It's appellant's contention that there was sufficient evidence for the case to proceed for a jury determination. There was evidence from both Tim Calhoun and Gus Gaston as to what, you know, the activities of that day, but it's plaintiff's contention that the major factor was that Devin Hall, the project manager and the president of F. Hall Contracting, he testified that there were meetings prior to the date of the incident where he was told that welding activities and the work that he was doing in cutting the pipe should not be done at the same time that the roofing contractors were working there. And Devin Hall from F. Hall was in charge of his crew that day. He was there the whole day. He worked alongside the workers. He told them where to cut and when to cut, and that he had experience as a project manager. He knew and should have known that his work in cutting pipes using cutting torches and saws would throw sparks that were likely or could cause a dangerous condition on the premises at the time. It's our position that this case involves a negligent activity and that Devin Hall was in charge of his crew, who at the time were performing a negligence activity at the time that the workers were injured, and that since he had clear warning and he knew or should have known that, and that all this evidence as far as the meetings, he there was some contradictory testimony where one time he said, well, we had meetings that related to this, that we weren't supposed to be welding and working at the same time with the contractors. He did admit that in his testimony, and granted, when his attorney talked to him about it at one point, he said that wasn't the case. But it's clear that he did testify that there were meetings related to him not working or his crew not working at the time. Well, that's the appellee's argument. But it's clear in this case that they're using power saws and torches with throughout sparks, and they're working on a building that's above a smaller building where roofers are using glues and adhesive. And Mr. Devin Hall, as a project manager who had experience in this area, who worked with these materials before as far as his power saws and cutting torches, that he knew or he should have known that this was likely to set up a dangerous condition. And the whole point of them telling him not to work at the same time as the roofers, even though, I mean, he didn't quite admit that it was because of fire danger, but it was clear that as a project manager and the type of work that he had done for several years, that he knew or should have known that this set up a dangerous condition. In fact, I mean, that there's testimony from Mr. Calhoun and Mr. Gaston that, in fact, that, you know, there was some concern about them using these saws and torches, but that Devin wanted to get the work completed. They needed to have it done that day. They wanted it done that day, so he proceeded even though it was dangerous to do so. It's our position that he knew or should have known. There was enough evidence on that issue, and so at least let the jury decide based on the testimony that was presented as opposed to a directed verdict in the case. Okay.
filing a claim, you know, a workers' comp claim, Calhoun and Gaston waive their right to proceed outside the act?
Now, Mr. Gaston never presented a claim before the workers' comp. Only Mr. Calhoun did.
Okay. How do you respond to that argument as to Mr. Calhoun?
Well, basically,
I mean, didn't they have to put in their application for workers' comp benefits that F. Hall was, didn't he have to put that F. Hall was his employer?
Right. But, okay, he did have to proceed as though it was his employer, but it's our position that employee status, independent contractor status, is a factual issue. And in fact, as the hearing officer indicated, he said that there was so much conflict in testimony related to whether he was or whether he wasn't, that in workers' comp cases, they tend to err on the side of the injured person and say, and classify you as an employee. Like I say, that standard is a lesser standard than you would have under Texas law, which there's, you know, certain factors that you have to look at to determine whether someone's an employee or an independent contractor. So, I mean, I understand the position that he went to workers' comp. He wasn't awarded any benefits. He lost the case. Of course, workers' comp indicated that he appeared to have been an employee for purposes of workers' comp. But, and I say in this case, at the very least, if you've got a fact issue, whether a person is an employee or independent contractor, then summary judgment wasn't, shouldn't have been granted in this case. At the very least, there should have been a determination of whether that person was an employee or independent contractor before you grant summary judgment, and that this wasn't a proper case for summary judgment. And basically, just based on the testimony that was presented, this is related to the end of the second argument on the directed verdict, is that there was enough evidence given to the jury where the court should have allowed the jury to decide the issues in the case, and that there was more than a scintilla of evidence related to the issues of negligence activity, whether Mr. Hall knew or should have known, and also the fact that clearly the fire was ignited by the roofing materials coming in contact with the sparks from the cutting torches and the saws. And in this case, the jury should have been allowed to determine whether F. Hall was at fault. And I know there's some issues about whether perhaps Mr. Gaston and Mr. Calhoun were contributory negligent, but in any event, those are issues that should have been determined by the jury as opposed to by the trial court. So that concludes my argument.
Thank you, Ms. Williams.
Okay.
Ready?
May it please the court. With respect to the issue as to Mr. Calhoun and the binding effect of the Texas Workers' Compensation Commission's findings in this matter, the issue as it was presented in the motion for summary judgment was whether or not the exclusive remedy provisions of the labor codes, the statutory workers' comp scheme, precluded a common law cause of action as asserted in the trial court here. The TWCC findings are in the record at the second volume, starting at page 208, and there's essentially four core findings. One, Calhoun applied for benefits. Number two, Hall was a statutory subscriber at the time of the incident of the October 24, 2003 accident or incident. Three, the TWCC determined that Calhoun was in the course and scope of his employment with Hall on the date in question. And four, that Mr. Calhoun suffered no compensable injury. As my mentor used to say, don't believe me, believe the record. Let's hear what the judicial officer that made the ruling for the TWCC said about this issue of employment. Concerning whether claimant was an employee of F. Hall Mowing, and again, in this proceeding, Ms. Williams represented Mr. Calhoun there before the TWCC seeking workers' compensation benefits at the time as well. Concerning whether claimant was an employee, and I'm reading from page 209, volume 2 of the clerk's record. Concerning whether claimant was an employee of F. Hall Mowing at the time of the claimed injury event, this is a question of fact, and there was some conflict in the evidence. The carrier took the position that claimant was an independent contractor. There was no written agreement or contract. The question of the employee status turns on who had the right of control of the details of the work, precisely the Redinger standard we apply to determine whether someone's an employee or independent contractor. It is precisely the exact same standard that applies in those proceedings as well as in a common law case where someone who is an independent contractor is asserting that the general contractor or owner exercised control over the details of their work such to make them their statutory employee. Reading further, the greater weight of the credible evidence establishes that claimant and his coworker, Mr. Gaston, were using equipment furnished by F. Hall Mowing and were being directed in the details of their work by an employee of F. Hall Mowing at the time in question. Claimant proved he was, claimant, Mr. Calhoun, proved he was the employee of F. Hall Mowing for the purposes of the Texas Workers' Compensation Act. It is our position that because Mr. Calhoun invoked the statutory scheme seeking workers' compensation benefits, then the consequence, namely the exclusive remedy provision in Chapter 408.001A of the Labor Code, precludes this cause of action. That's essentially exactly what the Supreme Court said in the Massey case cited on page 14 of our brief. The common law claim of negligence is precluded because of the exclusive remedy provision. The argument that's put forward in the brief by Mr. Calhoun here is that, wait a minute, you don't have to prove negligence in a workers' compensation proceeding, so therefore this is a different animal. This isn't an issue that was adjudicated by the TWCC. This is a separate claim. It's not like that claim. But the simple fact is, and logic clearly takes one quickly to the idea that just because the claimant is relieved of the burden of showing the employer was negligent, doesn't mean that somehow or another the exclusive remedy provision doesn't apply to a common law cause of action. Same arguments advanced by Mr. Calhoun with respect to the nature of his damages. He says there's certain claims that I can recover in common law that I couldn't recover in a comp hearing. Again, issues been addressed by courts in Texas, such as the Watts speech case with the Dallas Court of Appeals cited at page 15 of our brief. So again, and the same thing is true with the fact that the claim was unsuccessful, decided by Texas courts. The Azap case, AJAZ, and the Porter case that are cited on page 15 of our brief. The simple fact is that did the comp carrier for my client, Hall Mowing, take the position that he wasn't Hall Mowing's employee? Yes. Did they win? No. A judicial officer for the TWCC made a fact finding that was absolutely necessary to that case. It's part of the process that evidence is put on and that was clearly decided in the record. Accordingly, there was no question that Justice Holman's summary judgment as to the Calhoun claim was absolutely right under the force and effect that is given the TWCC's findings of fact. They're binding the res judicata. The 2008 decision from the Supreme Court in the Agala versus Bright Star case is essentially directly on point. Same situation. It was, a wages claim that was proceeded before the Texas Workforce Commission, slightly different commission. It was adjudicated. The claimant's claim was unsuccessful. They turned around and tried to file a common law claim in district court. Supreme Court said no can do. That finding with respect and that disposition of that claim by an administrative body is conclusive and given the same force as though it had been adjudicated in a court of law because it was necessary, and that is the purpose of that body. Turning briefly to the directed verdict as to Mr. Gaston's claim, the first thing I'd like to do is apologize to the court because on pages 14, 15, and 16 of my brief, I interchangeably use Mr. Calhoun and Mr. Gaston's name. I sincerely apologize for any confusion I caused. It's Mr. Gaston's claim that's being addressed throughout that section of my brief, and I apologize for that. So if we'll look at what the core argument that's being advanced here, page 13 of the appellant's brief, the gut of the claim is Devin Hall, the principal of Hall Mowing, knew and was told by the general contractor that there was hazardous or flammable chemicals being used by the roofing subcontractor in the area, and that he wasn't supposed to conduct any of his demolition activities at the time that those were going on, and therefore he was vested with this knowledge of this risk and shouldn't have done it. That's the gut of the claim that's being brought by Mr. Gaston. And while it's candidly a little hard to tell from the appellant's brief what precisely evidence they think there is, a number of pages are just cited in block. Again, I think the best answer is what's in the record. And the suggestion in the brief by Mr. Gaston is that Mr. Hall, that there's evidence in this record that Mr. Hall had conversations with the general contractor and was told of the risk of fire and not to operate or do his demolition activities at the time the roofing contractors were working down on the roof below. Again, Mr. Hall's subcontract is to cut the pipes out of the top of the building. There's basically a structure beneath it that's being re-roofed. And Mr. Hall testifies that what he was told was, don't be doing your activities because debris can fall down there and get on that roof. Never is there any conversation about the risk of fire. Again, I hate to read to the court, but the record is what matters here, I think. Page 42 of the fourth volume of the reporter's record. Okay, this is Ms. Williams' question. And weren't there some discussions that took place about welding? I mean, about demolition activities such as welding and roofing activity not occurring at the same time because of the use of flammable chemicals by roofers. There were some discussions about that prior to the fire, wasn't there? Answer from Mr. Hall, no. Okay, so your testimony is that no one ever indicated to you that the power saw and the torches cutting shouldn't be used in the same room as the roofing contractors. I didn't say that. I said that there were discussions about that. There were discussions about that? Yes. Prior to the fire? Yes. And those discussions were that the roofing, the welding, the cutting torches did not need to be used in the vicinity of the roofing contractor because they were using some highly flammable materials. Going on to page 43 of the record. No. Question. No discussion. Answer. No, that never happened. Page 47 of the record. Going to the day of the fire, you mentioned that there was this meeting with the day before with Jamel. Was Jamel the general contractor? Yes. And was there discussion not to let debris fall onto the roof while the roof was under construction? Yes. Was there ever discussion that there was some sort of risk of fire or that there was some flammability of the roof? No, sir. One more section of the brief, or of the record. Page 52, again, volume 4 of the reporter's record. But you already testified that there was another meeting where y'all worked, that you were being instructed that welding activities shouldn't be used the same time the roofer contractors were working. You testified to that. Yes, I'll pass the witness. Hall's attorney. And in that meeting, were you told not to do that? Excuse me. And in that meeting, were you told not to do that? That was because they didn't want debris falling onto the roof while the roof was under construction? Answer, yes. Question, and that day, did y'all stay away from the roof trying to prevent debris from falling on it? Yes. But at the time, did anyone tell you that there was some risk of fire on the day of this incident occurred? Answer, no. All the sites, all of the record, each and every one of them, support the proposition that was there a conversation about working in the area of the roofers? Absolutely there was. Does it suggest that there were conversations about concern about fire or flammable chemicals? Absolutely not. There was not. What the record demonstrates in this case is that the general contractor never mentioned a risk of fire or flammability of chemicals being used by the roofers. And I've just read those sites to you. They're in our brief. The general contractor actually instructed Hall to do the work that he did on the day in question. That's in, again, volume 4, pages 47, line 20 through page 48, line 14, page 52, lines 5 through 7. The fire was started when Gaston was cutting up on the roof and ignited the roof above them, not the one down below, on fire. The only person who saw the fire start was Mr. Hall. Both Mr. Gaston and Mr. Calhoun testified they had no idea how the fire started. Mr. Hall testified there was no chemical odors or smells about that seemed flammable at the time of the incident. Reporter's Record, page 51, lines 5 through 8 of the volume 4. And lastly, Gaston, this is his claim. He tells the court, I'm the one who was responsible for my safety, nobody else, my job. Volume 2, the Reporter's Record, page 50, line 24 through page 51, line 9. Again, the last thing I would say on the risk of fire is that I challenge the appellant and I challenge the court to find one slight piece of evidence in the record that suggests some type of roofing chemical started or caused this fire, let alone that Mr. Hall somehow knew something about some risk of fire at the time of the incident that supposedly occurred. There just simply isn't evidence in the record as to the things which Mr. Gaston believes or suggests to this court occurred in the trial court. For that reason, Justice Holman was absolutely 100% correct in finding that there was no evidence, not a scintilla of evidence, as to any of the elements of the causes of action or the negligent cause of action that was being advanced by Mr. Gaston. Based upon the correctness of the summary judgment as to the Calhoun claim, and based upon the correctness of the directed verdict as to the Gaston claim, Hall requests this court to affirm the trial court's judgment and its decisions in whole, and for any other relief we may require. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Your Honor, at best, I think that Mr. Ave's reading of the testimony from his client actually proves our point that there was conflicting testimony from Devin Hall as to the issue about the risk of fire. Some questions he said yes, some questions he said no. I mean, I asked him on page 42 of the record, that I said to him, okay, question. So your testimony is that no one ever indicated to you that the power saw and the torches cutting shouldn't be used in the same room as the roofing contractors. His answer was, I didn't say that. I said there were some discussions about that. Now, if there were discussions about not using power saws and torches, that could only relate to a fire danger. That wouldn't not so much relate to throwing debris on top of the building below. And next question, were there were discussions about that? Yes. I say prior to the fire? Yes. So, I mean, granted, sometimes he said no, sometimes he said yes, but it's clear that there was a question about the meetings and what was discussed in those meetings. His attorney asked him questions about, well, it didn't have to do with you all throwing debris below. My questions had to deal with, didn't y'all have discussions in the meetings prior to the fire about your crew not working with the power saws and torches because the roofers contractors were nearby? He indicated, yes, there were some discussions about that. So granted, he changed his answer and flip-flopped it, but I think the jury should have been able to take everything together and make a decision whether F. Hall should have been working that day in the vicinity of the roofers based on the evidence they heard, whether F. Hall had a duty to his crew to not work that day or to work that day. And also, like as I said before, I think that the issue of employee status versus independent contractor status, which is a threshold issue, should have been something the jury should have had a chance to make a decision on. So I think in this case there was more than a scintilla of evidence. There was a fire that occurred that was ignited related to the roofing materials and the cutting torches, and that at the very least there was enough evidence for a jury to listen. If they listened to two workers who were there as well as the project manager, for them to make a decision based on what they heard, whether there was negligence in this case and whether the percentage of negligence, the contributory negligence, and also whether the plaintiffs were entitled to recover in this case.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Thank you, Mr. Ave. Thank you both for your arguments and for your good briefs. And your case is submitted, and we will adjourn for the day.
Thank you.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals.